Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey guys, you ever wonder what Phil and I wear while we podcast? You can find out if you join our Patreon. We'll also be talking about the films of 1989, but that's definitely less important than seeing our Zoom backgrounds, our headphone choices, and our sweatshirts.
It's true. It's true. You'll get to see all the various pieces of artwork that I have framed on my office wall, and you can see Kenny's garden, sort of. So that's something. That's exciting.
It's a hanging garden.
It's a hanging garden. But perhaps more important than anything, we are doing this Patreon to cover the best films of 1989. Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, with amazing guests like Tom Meissen, Liz Hanna, Joanna Robinson, Brian Cogman, Chuck Hayward. You can sign up at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. And for $5, you'll get access to all the audio of these fantastic episodes. For a few bucks more, you'll get video as well of our 99 and 89 episodes. And perhaps, most importantly, you'll be supporting us so we can just keep making podcast content for you guys. Welcome to Podcast Like It's 1999. I'm your host, Phil Iskov, and with me today is Jennifer Lauren DiBella, actress. She was on Grey's Anatomy. She was on 911. She was, we shot scenes with her for Station 19. She was very close to being on Station 19. It was actually my episode. And I don't know what to tell you. Time is a flat circle or whatever we're saying now. Either way, didn't make it into that episode. She also auditioned for Xenon 3, yes. Not that anyone will ever see it outside of her family and I think myself, but I did see some footage and it is something to behold. She's also an acting consultant and coach. I can't say that she's the biggest Xenon girl of the 21st century fan, but she's certainly up there.
Yeah.
If Twitter is a metric of anything, she's not alone. There are lots of people that seem to grow up on this film. It will surprise no one to know that I didn't know this film existed. I reached out to Jen. I said, "Hey, love to have you on the podcast." Xenon was what she chose. She's representing her Xenon Zoom supernova, whatever the fan base of Xenon is. Thank you for being here, Jen.
Thank you for having me. I'm so pumped. Major.
I I don't doubt your enthusiasm for this film at all. And I'll say this, as I mentioned to you before we got on mic, you know, I tweeted about this a little bit last night. Mm-hmm. You know, 10:30 at night on the West Coast, and more people engaged on this tweet than I would have expected.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that are very, very passionate about Xenon. Okay. Let's rewind. It's 1999. Mm-hmm. You are how old?
I am under 10. Okay. I am 8 years old. I am 8 years old.
The under 10 was vague, but you know. I appreciated it. Yeah, yeah. So to give a little bit of context for the people that don't know what Xenon is. Mm-hmm. The title is Xenon : Girl of the 21st Century.
Yes.
It was originally slated to air on the Disney Channel in December of 98. However, it ultimately premiered on January 23rd, 1999. Mm-hmm. It then got a Walt Disney Home Video release on VHS in September of 2000. Did you see this as it aired, or was this a video cassette?
Oh, purchase? I saw this as it aired. So the Disney Channel original
I didn't
movies.
Question your bona fides.
No, I know there are people listening right now because I saw the tweets. The Disney Channel original movies, that was it. So usually, if I remember correctly, there would be one released a month. Mm-hmm. And so this was a big event on a Saturday at 8 p.m., let's say.
But yeah, 100%.
This was the talk of recess. That is what we're talking about.
So the talk of recess is that sort of the equivalent of water cooler at work?
Sure, just with kickballs.
Yes,
I'm pretty sure that that's what that is. But yeah, so this would be something that you would go over your friend's house and go, Emily. I had a friend named Emily. Uh-huh. Emily, that space movie's on Saturday. And uh-huh. And it really would. I mean, kind of like a water cooler situation where when you got back to school that next Monday, at least for mm-hmm. a week, this was the hype. But Xenon, the hype was a while.
It lasted.
Yeah.
So again, in 99, mm-hmm. there were 8 Disney Channel films that were released. Now, I don't want to get everybody's hopes up. We will not be covering all of these films. We might cover a couple others because there are some diehard Smart House fans out there. Mm-hmm. So people really want to hear about Smart House. I've never seen it.
Johnny Tsunami
was
Cheetah Girls.
Another one.
Maybe a different year? Cheetah Girls, different year?
Cheetah Girls was not 99. It's possible that was earlier.
I'm just really trying to get a campaign for a series for your 1999 podcast.
I appreciate that. I very much so. Xenon was the first of 99. She comes out in January. Mm-hmm. Then it's Can of Worms.
I don't remember that one.
Year, 13th year, but the boy who realizes he's a mermaid.
Yes.
As he turns 13. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Okay. Yes.
Then there was Smart House, which, as you imagine, is about a smart house. It's about a sort of tech-savvy house.
The Lawrence brothers, maybe?
Maybe.
I think one of them.
I think it's, what's her name? Oh, my God. It's Katie Sagal. And directed by LeVar Burton.
Wow. Wait, so there was a Lawrence Brothers movie. I thought it was Smart House.
Oh, I'm sure there is. Horse Sense, I think, might be the one you're thinking of.
Horse Sense, yes! It is! Yes. I think there was multiple brothers in that one.
There are. Joey and Andrew Lawrence are in Horse Sense.
Wow.
That is about a bunch of, I guess, boys that, I don't know, raising horses or
horses.
Some shit. I really don't know. The plot synopsis is, I'm not even kidding, far too long for me to read. But that came out in November. There's a movie called Genius, Genius Charlie Boyd enrolls in college at the age of 13 and takes on a bad boy image in order to impress and gain friends.
Just hysterical. We've all been there. Now I'd have to look up the image. Yeah, we've all been there. Just taking on the badass image.
And then, as you mentioned, Johnny Tsunami, everyone's favorite Johnny Tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
So my roommate is around your age. Mm-hmm. Last night we were watching Xenon. It obviously brought back some memories for her. She also remembered that the actor who played Johnny Tsunami was a waiter at The Fat Dog on Fairfax.
In North Hollywood?
Not North Hollywood.
Not that one.
On Fairfax and Santa Monica.
Okay, so okay.
And that she was really excited when she saw him there. He less so, I imagine, since, you know, he's a waiter. He was the lead of a movie.
Yeah, but you know what? That one phone call can come, honey. You just don't know.
You just don't know.
Mm-mm.
So those are the Disney Channel films of 1999. We are obviously focused today on everyone's favorite space station teenager.
Yes.
Xenon Carr. So, okay. You see this movie mm-hmm. when you're 8.
Oh, yeah.
What was it that you loved so much about it? What do you think it was that, I mean, other than the fact that, and it's sad to say this, but like female protagonists, not always the case. It's mm-hmm. great to see, you know, a young female lead. Disney Channel probably did it more, you know, around this time you're seeing it more, but still, was there something in particular about Xenon that just really spoke to you?
I obviously, as a kid who loved to play pretend, saw uh-huh. the costumes and I was sent. I was really excited about it. I really also loved the hair. The hair is a standout. I remember the poster. And
sure. Do you know what the tagline for the poster is, though?
Cetus Lapidus?
She says it so calm and cool. Like it's no big deal. That's not what it is. It is, she's one galactic girl who saves the day in a stellar way.
I love that. Yeah. Fun fact, I named my first iPod Nano Stellar. Okay. And that was way after 8 years old.
Major.
So the lasting effect. To answer your question, I remember loving the costumes. I knew, you know, okay, the Lawrence brothers and their horses, whatever. We've seen it, right? We've seen horses.
Yeah. We've been there.
But space station, to really play pretend and just feel like you're, you know, on the spacecraft. And again, the costumes and the hair, man, the hair was very Baby Spice.
Oh my God. I mean,
it is Baby Spice.
All the hair that every woman has in this movie is Spice Girl oriented in some form or another. So, okay. The big question, I have a lot of questions.
That was for a Disney focus group, that question.
No. I mean, listen. Okay. So there's a pretty big leap that they make when she gets to Earth.
Yeah.
Which is, everywhere else is super futuristic, but where we are just happens to look like 1999.
And they also knock Jersey at one point.
Yeah.
Some girl comes over and she goes, are you from Jersey? Yeah. Because she doesn't like her outfit. I was like, oh.
Yeah. It's, I mean, so they basically, listen, I understand it's 1999. It's Disney Channel. The budget is what the budget is, right?
Yes.
I mean, we will talk about the special effects, but the budget is what the budget is.
Sure.
So I understand that they're like, how do we cheat a way to make it so that this little corner of Earth that we happen to be in just doesn't look that futuristic, except for there's once a shot of like a floating cruise ship at one point that just like floats by on the river or lake that
wherever they are.
Whatever. I mean, it's Vancouver, spoiler. It's obviously Vancouver. And it's just one of those things where like every now and then there'll be like a slightly futuristic thing. Like the menu happens to be see-through, which I think as we know, makes it very hard to
read. We'll probably get to the kid hackers and all their freaking technology.
We'll get there.
Yeah. For the most part, obviously, the contrast between, oh, that's way out there. And I don't know if the divide was as stark, but I guess that was purposely why they were not in LA? Question mark?
Yeah. I mean, okay. I understand. And just to be clear here, I'm not just going to dunk on this movie for the next, you know, 90
minutes. Oh, no, I will not allow it. I won't allow it.
No. I was, first of all, wasn't expecting you to. Second of all, I just, you know, for our listeners, I understand that we're watching, that this is a Disney film, right? Like, there are not even standards necessarily. It's just like the audience is different. You're aiming this at teenagers or young kids. So you don't need to be, you know, you don't want to really drill into the plot and really get into the logistics of things because that's not necessarily fair. Mm-hmm. But there are some big macro ideas that I do take a little bit of umbrage with, and we will talk about those. But so back to you. You're 9 years old, 8 years old. You watch this film and you're like the clothes. You're all about the pseudo futuristic clothes.
Well, that is what attracted me to watch it. When I watched it, it was a different story. It was all the things. I mean, I can't dunk this film because I didn't know what the heck was going on. Let's be honest. Protozoa was cool. His hair was cool. Come on.
Okay.
For the time.
for our listeners, Protozoa is a pop star within the universe of Xenon.
Yes.
Whose hair is straight out of NSYNC.
I just don't know what was first. I don't know.
The age-old question. What came first, right. Protozoa or
NSYNC? Who spiked it first?
I couldn't tell you. But my he is a sort of, I don't know, pop rap sort of star.
I heard an interview with, I believe his name is also Philip Rise. I don't know if I'm saying that right. But they wanted this character to be like Sting, which to me is so funny. I don't know what the breakdown was, but they wanted him to be like Sting when he came in for producer sessions, apparently. And he goes, I don't know how to do that.
8-year-olds love Sting.
He goes, I don't have that, but I can do this. That's apparently how that went down.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But yes, Protozoa was a huge part, people know that song. I would encourage you to start this podcast with the song and really get people pumped.
Oh, we will. I'm sure that I'm sure our producer Will is listening right now. And he's taking note of these Zoom. Is it the name of the song?
Supernova Girl.
Supernova Girl. Mm-hmm. Right.
It has to be from the movie, though.
It's the end of the movie. There are no verses. Spoiler. It's just chorus. It's just chorus. He just says zoom,
a little.
You're my supernova girl.
Yeah, but there's stargazing megaplex. There's that thing. I don't know how else it goes, but that's what it starts with. And then he interrupts to talk to the crowd, and then he does a bad dance, but we love it, especially
the he does all of these things. And let me tell you guys, it's really entertaining.
Yes.
Okay. Did you find yourself, I mean, outside of the fact that you wanted to be on the Xenon sequels, because there were two sequels that came off of this. It should also be said, too, that in my research, I found out that this was supposed to be a television show, not a movie originally.
Oh,
that it was a pilot, and that the plan was going to be more of sort of like Xenon's adventures on Earth. You know, a little more of a sort of, because there's kind of this old school, almost like Bewitched, I Dream of Jeannie kind of component to Xenon, mm-hmm. a little bit, like fish out of water, and she knows things that other people don't. I mean, this is where we really get into the conceptual issue I have with the fact that this space station seems like it's another fucking planet. Like, it seems like it's like the space station is in the year 4000 and Earth is just chilling in 99. And there's no, like, so why would there be slang on a space station, for instance?
You know, it's interesting because there was, I believe, another Disney Channel original movie. I will not remember. It also has something to do with, I think the girl was a mermaid. People will know what I'm talking
that
about.
Right. That sounds,
but
that
anyway,
right.
Or she was an alien that they found in the water. But when Xenon first comes back to Earth, I was reminded of that because everyone was, why is she wearing those clothes? Why is it this? And we see her slowly but surely get into normal clothes because Aunt Judy buys it for her. Aunt Judy is just a topic we'll have to get into.
Will go there too.
Yeah, but it was very much, this is an alien to me. And if these kids are in this school, just a school, and this spacecraft does exist, you would imagine that one, they might be jazzed that this person is coming into their school. Yeah. That's so cool. You're in space. What it's like. Well, whatever. No. But they seem to have no idea.
Yeah. They have no idea. It's okay. I understand that the plan, if they had their druthers, if it was me, okay, for instance, why wouldn't you just make her from literally from the future? Like, why don't you just have, like, the space station that she was on, you know, she falls in, I don't know, some sort of weird time, space, something or other. And
when
lands
she goes
on
outside in those colors, I forgot what
and
it was called,
like,
some solar or something.
Yeah.
She could travel. She could fall into a black hole. Oh, that would be a little dark for Disney.
All sorts of shit like that, where it's like, at least that way it's like, okay, it's futuristic slang. Mm. It's not like, this would literally be like if the people on the space station Mir came back to Earth and it created their own lingo and it pretended that, and everyone's like, why are you talking like a weirdo?
Right.
I don't understand what you're doing.
But, you know, Xenon really had a lot more sass than I remember, too, because even when Greg goes, oh, yeah, macro or alpha or whatever, she was like, I didn't think I had to learn another language. Whoa, okay, okay, girl. Like, okay. But, you know, they equally go back and forth. That Margie character, I never paid attention to that before. I was like, first of all, she's always in boas. Boas. Just, she's always
wearing
like
scarves.
A feather thing. That was really funny. But yeah, the language thing. I mean, I even, when I was watching it, I actually forgot about, you know, I know Zetus Lapidus, everyone will remember that, but Lunarius and Major and Minor and Gaseous, they say Gaseous a lot.
Yeah, okay. And that I want to ask you, is that a good thing or a bad thing? They say the word all the time, and contextually within the sentence, I can't tell if it's a good thing or a bad thing.
It's such a good point that you make, because I know that Nebula, Raven's character,
yes.
I think at one point she says it, and I think it's an exciting, positive connotation. And then I think Xenon says something like, it would just be so gaseous or something like that. So we didn't really have a definition.
Yeah, they're not clear about the context of some of these words. It feels like, you know, some old guy that was like, what would futuristic teens say? And then he just picked a bunch of random words.
And I will say again, as the 8-year-old going back to recess afterwards, we tried to implement that into our language for probably, again, a week or so, and then realized, I guess this isn't really a thing that we do. But I, as the one who wanted to play pretend all the time, I was doing the hair. I had a school uniform, so I couldn't find spandex to wear to school. I mean, I tried all of the things. I was always the one to push it just a little too far. It's over. But again, it was that world as an 8-year-old. Everyone was pretending to be from a space station.
What's the word that Gretchen's trying to make happen?
Fetch. Exactly.
Feels like
that.
You guys were really trying to make Major happen or something along those lines.
Major probably could have happened, but Lunarius probably was going to get cut pretty soon. Oh, that's so Lunarius.
I mean, Stellar is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Stellar is a thing that people say.
Yeah.
And I understand the space component. I understand, like, so
Sweat Miner. Sweat Miner is also a phrase that I picked up this time. Sweat Miner, Commander, or whatever the heck. Like chill out or something like that.
Oh,
I would imagine. Sweat Miner. It's no big deal. Let's just try people. Now. Let's try now. Let's come out of isolation and just speak this
that
way.
That actually would be, if you came out of isolation, out of quarantine, using Xenon's vocabulary.
Yes, a padded white room.
I think it'd be amazing. I think you'd be surprised how many roles you got.
Can you imagine? Gone are the cut days. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
I'll just be like, this script is Lunarius, Major.
People will be like, well, she's completely out of her mind, but she's dedicated to the art.
It's a choice.
It's a choice. She's really choosing. I'm going to give a brief synopsis for our listeners who have not seen Xenon Girl of the 21st Century. The year is 2049, and Xenon Carr is an inquisitive 13-year-old girl who lives with her family on an Earth-orbiting space station. After getting into trouble with the space station's commander, Edward Plank, Xenon's parents punish her by sending her to Earth to live with her Aunt Judy. Xenon 21st Girl of the 21st Century didn't get a theatrical release, so it doesn't have a critical mass on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score is, I have to say, it's a surprising 62%. If I can glean from the people I know, they really love this thing.
Yes.
So I'm surprised that it has as low a score as it does. But that is its score. There were two other sequels that they made, neither of which I think were as successful as this one. And I think I can safely say, I imagine you'll feel the same way. It feels like inevitably Disney Plus will reboot this. This will be a Disney Plus TV show in less than 5 years.
For sure. And when I was watching this in preparation for this, when I was watching the movie, I wanted to see if there had been any kind of reunion. Yeah. And they did do, I forgot who did it, but Kirsten Storms, the man now who played Greg and Protozoa, Philip, they did do a reunion, I want to say in March or April of last year, because Disney Plus was going to release it, and it is on Disney Plus now. And yes, they're totally down. You could tell they're totally down. I'm totally down. Maybe my dream is not over.
Oh, now, your dream is very much alive. You
but
could
here's the
very
thing.
Much be Aunt Judy in the remake.
He said it. I didn't. He nailed it. Like, that is who she's going to be now. You know,
I don't mean that in a shitty way. I mean that in
sure.
like a way that you would be great Aunt Judy.
I both thrive in that thought and also just fear it. Because when I watched it this time around,
so
look how red I'm getting. I really watched it this time around going, well, you would nail that these days, you neurotic, crazy pants. But also love. We love Judy. She's a blast.
For the record, I wasn't projecting Judy's characteristics onto you, just to be clear.
Don't you worry about that. I'm
not suggesting that you exude the neuroses and single components that Judy seems to radiate.
Hey, Judy has a firehouse. She has such
That's good. She has a sweet house.
It's what
house.
Does she do? It's never said. We don't know. She just lives in a freaking mansion.
She goes to live on the space station. She's got a really nice house. I would stay on Earth.
Well,
in the house.
You know, because I also listen to this podcast, with your Sex and the City series right now, it's so funny that all of them, you just go, we're not talking about the movies. Like, it's just very the sequel, Xenon the Zequel, I believe it is, sequel, and then D3. I don't even know what that one's name is. I don't even think I've ever watched them.
Really?
Yes, and that's shocking to me, too.
You call yourself a fan.
Yeah, but you know,
I'm looking up to see what the name of the other one is.
I just feel like it's going to be just as good as the Before Sunrise trilogy, so I just have to dive on in.
Who suggested you watch the Before movies?
It might have been you. I don't know how I didn't know that. But yes, I feel like I will go and watch when I really have
time. Don't do it. I mean, okay, so Xenon the Zequel came out in 2001. And does star Kristen is in that.
Yeah.
I don't quite know what it's about, and I'm not really going to read the synopsis. But no. Xenon Z3 comes out in 2004, also stars Kristen and Raven and the same writers. So it's the same crew brought back for another.
Well, see, Raven, I was reading, didn't do the second one because she was caught up in production schedule of Dr. Dolittle 2, which is amazing. So she was just recast, but then she came back.
She made the right choice. She made the right choice.
Let's see now D3, as we'll get into. I didn't watch because I was upset. We'll get into that.
You didn't get the part. Yeah, I mean, and listen, that's totally fair. And I mean, I don't know what to say other than the fact that they should have given you the role. Just think of what could have happened. I mean,
I know.
Who knows? I'll say this. I think that this film makes some choices. And I think that those are, we've sort of talked about some of them, but the idea that the parents, as punishment, jettison their child into space is crazy. And
no, you mean out of space. Out of space.
Into space towards Earth. Like she still has to, I mean.
Right. Right.
I mean, I understand that they're a little perturbed with Xenon because she sort of, I'm not quite sure what the logic is, but she puts on a spacesuit and goes out of outside of the space station to look at Earth, like to look at some sort of a galaxy, star
some
situation.
Kind of lights, some kind of solar flare.
Look out the window?
I think it was
the window.
No, because she's Xenon and she's brave and bold. That's why. She's adventurous.
So basically what happens is her and her friend, she's like, I'm going to go out in this spacesuit. So she gets in the spacesuit and she's like, you know, yank. Don't make sure that I don't, you know, get lost out in the universe.
Floating.
Like, I mean, anyway. So her dad catches her. And it's not even like he's angry.
No.
He's just kind of like, oh, Xenon, you crazy girl. What did you get up to? The whole thing's fucking bonkers.
I was trying to think about the equivalent because, okay, she's 13 years old. Yeah. She's 13 years old. She's only lived in this space station her whole life, except she got there when she was 5. So the majority of her life, she only knows these 4 walls or whatever walls. And I was trying to think, one, is that the only way you can rebel on this space station as a teenager? And two, what would be the equivalent at 13 for you and I of getting grounded to Earth? The mom doesn't even cry when she goes, okay, we'll try to get you back soon. Bye. I mean, talk about, so I go to LA from New York and my parents are like, no. So you really think about, is that boarding school? What would that be?
The impression that I get is that they know that they've pissed off the commander so much that it's threatening their livelihood on this space station, or at least their experiments that they're doing, or something along those lines.
They're scientists.
Still unclear. Yeah. And the fear is that he's going to be so upset with them that he might kick all of them off of the space station. So the thought process is we'll boot our daughter to Earth for a little bit and hope that he chills out and then she can come back soon. I mean, it's thin. It's a thin plot. But that's where
and
we live.
And also, again, if this is all she knew, of course, they don't have to go into the crazy details as a Disney movie, but she just gets on the shuttle with a tiny backpack that I don't think is full at all. But more importantly, she gets on this space shuttle. When she was 5, she was on this space shuttle. She hasn't known this at all. And I think she's perturbed. But there's no freaking out. What is this new experience? What is this and that? And
no, there's none of that. She trips on the stairs out of the plane
and sneezes.
And says, thanks, gravity, and sneezes.
Yeah, I love that
She's
line.
Like pissed at gravity.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah, a sneeze. Totally.
Fuck this.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Totally.
So there's that. She doesn't. Yeah, you're absolutely right. She doesn't. There's really no pushback. She doesn't really have any problems with Earth so much. The kids are a little bratty, but like she gets over that pretty quickly. I want to talk about the space station for a bit before we get to Earth. The space station set design. Is like what it would be living inside a Fisher Price kitchen or a Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese. Or the Gravitron. Do you remember the Gravitron at these tiny little carnivals that would come around?
Sure.
That felt like it was the size of, now when I watch it back, I go, this is a little dark. It's a little dark in here.
There's no windows.
Very tinny.
It's tiny and tinny.
And tinny, yes.
It is. I mean, I don't think that anyone should be worried about injuring themselves because everything has rounded edges and is plastic.
Yeah.
So it's like you're good. There's no sharp edges. The living space that the parents and Xenon live in is a closet.
A tuna can.
It's a tuna can.
It's a tuna can.
with just like plastic, I just could not get over the fact that everything, because I guess the thought process was it's 1999 or 1998 or whenever they shot this, and they're like, what do kids think the future is going to look like? Like, what's a kid friendly future, right? And a kid friendly future apparently kind of looks like Demolition Man. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie, but that's kind of what it is. It's just very sort of very colorful. Very plasticky.
I do love the colors. It reminds me of galaxy lights. And concerts. That's just a me thing. But when
concerts are you going to?
Lunarious ones. I do think that it just came to me. Space Mountain, when you're online for that ride, it does also have that tinniness, but
I've never been on Space Mountain.
Oh, gosh.
So I went to, just a little bit of context on me. I went to Disneyland for the first time in 2019 because I don't go on rides.
Okay.
I just don't like being shaken violently.
That's fine. I'm done with it. I went to, Six Flags maybe 3 years ago, and I'm officially done. I thought I really cheated death that day, and I'm done. I'm done. We could talk about
that. We're so glad to have you. We're so glad you survived.
Yeah, seriously.
Space Mountain, it was similar to this.
Yes, I was thinking about that design, but again, as an eight-year-old, in the eyes of an eight-year-old, Xenon's room, that first opening sequence, I thought it was so cool that she could see Earth out the window. I thought that was the coolest thing. I'm like, I just love that. And then they have that cool shot outside with her face in the window, Xenon. Great opening.
Okay, see, I have to put myself into a, like, under 10-year-old headspace.
Yeah.
And that's tough, because
Spice Girls is playing right before the premiere of Xenon.
You're right.
You probably have crazy hair already. There's no phones. There's no Instagrams.
There's a lot of tablets. A lot of iPad-like tablets.
Yes.
Going on.
Yes, in this world, I thought that was so cool that these Zap Pads, I think they're called.
Why didn't Apple go with Zap Pad?
That's so cool to think that this kind of predicted the future.
Oh my god. Here's what I'll say. They predicted that Chelsea Clinton would be president.
Yeah.
And listen, 2049, you never know.
You really
don't. It's certainly possible, even though the election wouldn't be in 2049 just based on the math that we're doing right now, but it would be around that time. 2048, for instance, she might be running for all we know. But it's a very sort of like that in and of itself that's obviously as political as this, like this movie isn't interested in being political.
Yeah.
But like it's 1999. Clinton is literally being impeached. Like it's happening as this movie
This is January 23rd, 1999. Yeah.
So he is, if he hasn't been impeached, it's happening any minute, which is kind of amazing. So the fact that they kept that joke in, sure. The space station life has a very Wall-E kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. People aren't fat and floating around, but it still has a similar kind of vibe to it. The commander definitely feels like the guy who runs the ship in Wall-E. I don't know if you agree. Have you seen Wall-E?
Like one time when it first came out.
Jen,
it really,
you gotta watch Wall-E again.
I just remember the put on your Sunday clothes. I remember that. That's about it.
I mean, the first hour of that movie is just pure tears for me. Like it's just, he's the saddest, cutest
and
robot
also sweet
in the world.
Like this sweet thing, I remember the very the sweetness of it. Mm-hmm. But I was just
and
a fan of Hello Dolly at the time.
Just damn. So the space station has a very kind of that vibe. The special effects, I understand they didn't have a lot of money. And even the sequence when she goes out in the spacesuit, that looked pretty decent for the most part. Things get dodgy when we're seeing the spaceship itself land on Earth and take off from Earth.
Yeah.
That looks straight out of a video game. Like that looks like that. But I mean, anyway.
I want to shout out real quick to the actor. I mean, minor role. Thought she was badass. The woman who drives the space shuttle.
She is great.
No nonsense. It's leaving now.
We're leaving now.
Get your ass in the seat and follow my rules. And then later when Wyndham's like, we have to turn around, she's like, nope, we're refueling. We love her. Like, hell yeah.
You know, I mean, it's, you have to stan her. She's great. Yeah. She's definitely, she means business. She's not fucking around.
No.
It's pretty awesome. I just want to take a second to talk about the fact that on Earth in 2049, just fully driving 1999 VW Beetles.
Yeah, like just everyone.
Everyone.
Everyone just has one.
A car that is no less than 50 years out of date. Everyone's driving them.
And the 13-year-olds are too.
Yes. Just I mean, first of all, I had a VW Beetle in 1998 or 99.
Yeah.
Or my mom did. It wasn't mine. And it was fun to drive around. They were fun to drive around. I get why. And they were sort of, they felt futuristic, you know, the way, the design, the whole thing they did. But they weren't actually futuristic. Like, to put it in 2049 is just absurd to me, but whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And I think Disney could have just, I mean, they do use BMW and everything, so maybe they had a deal or something, but they could have absolutely invented something
for sure. This. Yes, but my feeling probably was VW paid a fair amount of money for it to be their car, and it was Disney Channel. They're like, yeah, yeah, no, it's like, you know, it's the 2049 model. Anyway. Whatever. I thought that the guy who plays Lutz, the guy who plays like the sidekick, the henchman, has a very Jim Rash energy.
Jim Rash as Dr. Finkelstein from Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right?
Those two together, that's what he's
doing. Charlie, it's like Xenon. Yeah, yeah. It's that same thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But he was wonderful.
And he was great.
Scary.
He knew what movie he was in.
Yeah, yes. Yes, totally played to the kids. We love but that.
Most people didn't.
Okay.
Like, I just, there are performances in it. I mean, first of all, Xenon gets it.
Kirsten Storms gets it. We love Kirsten her Storms, up and down.
She's great. She gets it. I think she's just more like, gets that she's number one on the call sheet. Less so than like any of the sort of, she's committed to the bit. And that's all that you need. Mm-hmm. The parents...
I looked it up. They were recast too afterwards. But now that I'm older, now I think, okay, did they, well, you know, maybe they didn't want to do it again. So I don't ever see that as, oh, they were recast. Maybe they were, but maybe they were like, meh. I did love the dad so much, but he was not going to discipline her whatsoever. He was like, put mom in the stress helmet, put her in the, I think it was called, put her in the chill chamber. The chill chamber.
There was a chill chamber and there was a stress helmet. The stress helmet looked...
that was insane to me, watching it now.
So, for context for our listeners, I really think the only way to describe it is sort of a helmet.
A purple velour helmet.
A purple velour helmet with a series of metal orbs on it that gold go around orbs. Her forehead. Gold orbs. And that was apparently... her relaxation helmet or something like that, her anxiety helmet. And then she went to the chill chamber as well. Here's the other thing. Didn't think the mom was overreacting at all. That she was being, I actually thought she was playing down. Like, I actually think that she should have been way more upset by what was going on, but.
Oh yeah. And I would have been like, husband, get on board. The child husband. Is crazy pants. Yeah. You know, whatever, whoever your person is. But yes, I, the whole time now watching it back, when they said chill chamber, I was like, damn, I want a chill chamber.
Fucking want a chill chamber right now. So hard.
I was like, oh my God, can you imagine if you could go into a chill chamber?
It sounds glorious. So I'm going to slight sidebar here because it feels similar. I've been watching a lot of Shark Tank lately because it requires nothing of my brain.
No mind.
Yeah, it's great. And it's just people pitching. And as you know, pitching is what we do as writers and whatever. So I'm watching a lot of Shark Tank. Yesterday, there's a Shark Tank episode where this woman is pitching. She's a nurse for infants and like the NICU, what have you. And this pad that vibrates. Like when kids are crying, you lie them down on this vibrating pad and it like instantly just They just like instantly stop crying and go to sleep. Like it's okay. It's a perfect thing. And I was just like, can I get one of those? Can I have an adult one of those?
Can I have a thunder blanket? Great right now. Whatever those, what is it? Is it a thunder blanket?
There's a weighted blanket.
A weighted blanket that also does that because, yes. Anything.
That sounds great. I have a weighted blanket and listen, weighted blankets are great. I'm not shitting on a weighted blanket. But like, you know, a little bit of vibration wouldn't hurt. Like a little bit of just like, give me something that can really mellow me out.
Yes.
That doesn't require a prescription.
I mean, I have to sometimes meditate, and you and I have spoken about anxiety before. Yeah. I have to sometimes just imagine, all right, I'm on a lavender pillow with in a field so far away. I look up at the stars and I see Xenon, you know, whatever the hell I have to do.
Can I just say that the tremble in your voice was so perfect? Because like I'll close my eyes and I just heard you. I can't even. Okay, continue. Sorry.
But yes, the things we must do to chill the fuck out. If there's a chill chamber that I could walk in. 30 seconds in a chill chamber? Can you imagine? It's like working in a restaurant. You go into the walk-in freezer, and then you come out. Maybe you're chilled.
A chill chamber seems like something that should be pitched on Shark Tank.
And by 2049.
49 would exist. Yeah.
Yes, please. Yeah. Let's get on that.
I mean, how... Yeah. We have, I think, we need to put more effort into anti-anxiety situations, especially since for whatever reason North America has decided that we want to work everyone to the bone. She goes to the chill chamber. Xenon and her dad have a moment where the dad's like, that was fucking awesome, how cool was it?
And she
was like, yeah, dad. Anyway, so that happens. He obviously, you know, good cop, bad cop, that's sort of that dynamic. But she fucks up enough that she's sent to Earth. I want to kind of scan through some of my notes here. So she gets to Earth. Aunt Judy picks her up at the airport,
at the spaceport, the Plaza of Nations. I looked it up. I was like, where do they go? And it actually is the Plaza of Nations.
So she picks her up at the Plaza of Nations. But before that. She's kicked to Earth. She sees Aunt Judy, and they're cross cutting between, the Wyndham giving a speech to the inhabitants of the space station about how he's reinvesting in the space station. And meanwhile, Xenon is meeting Aunt Judy. The cafeteria space on the space station, straight out of a Chuck E. Cheese. Like that was just, everything's like, it just, it's insane.
The trays, so the everything.
The trays, the seats, everything.
Yes.
So she gets there. Aunt Judy and her sit down at some sort of patio side restaurant.
Yes.
And immediately Xenon asks the obvious question, what the fuck is this? This is not what I thought Earth looked like. And she's like, the big cities are crazy futuristic, but this city looks just like 1999. I mean, is essentially what she says.
Yes.
Like, for production purposes, we need to do this. So it's obviously a bit of a cheat. We have the menu that's see-through, which is just hard to read. Like, that's not futuristic. That's just bad graphic design.
Bad marketing.
It's bad marketing. So on Earth, Xenon experiences trouble fitting in with the other kids who consider her name and her space station slang to be weird. True.
I mean, you still arrived to school looking like an alien. Judy, you could have stepped in and tried to get clothes the first hour of arrival. You could have stepped in. But at that outdoor dining venue, that was that kid Margie was just, but now this was interesting
on her
to me.
Ass, like she that.
Super me. As a little actress, that was she killed it. But that is something that I noticed in this movie compared to nowadays, that notion of bullying was in a lot of these movies. And I think now there used to be a type. Are you mean girl? Do you play mean girl? And now I don't really think it's that anymore, because one, it's really not tolerated. Someone would finally step in and go, hey, got the shit, hopefully. But Xenon at least held her own. But they were mean.
Yeah, they were mean. And I mean, so we're now at the pool class scene.
Yes. Yes.
Which is fucked up. So basically, although it is fucked up. What essentially happens is Xenon is bragging about how good a swimmer she is. And then Maggie, I believe is her name or whatever,
Margie,
pushes her into the pool.
Yeah, pushes her into the pool.
Now, two things occur to me. The first is that the underwater sequence that we get is a little bit over the top. It goes on for a good minute and a half.
A good while.
What are we doing here? Like, I get it. It's Jeopardy. She's in Jeopardy. But like, anyway.
But also, there was a weightlessness to it. Watching it back, I didn't know if Xenon felt in trouble. I know this is so nitpicky, but I didn't feel the panic. I just thought she was kind of floating like she was in space that one time. And then Greg comes in to get her.
But then when she gets out, she's like, I meant swimming in space?
Yeah, and it was so, very, very upset about it. If I saw Margie after a homegirl just pushed me in the pool, come here, Margie. But meanwhile, she just gets out and she's like, harumph, and she walks away. And, you know, Greg saves the freaking day, not the teacher. Let's just talk about how the teacher did not jump in to get Xenon. But Greg comes in, but obviously we know that that's a plot point because now Greg cares and everything. Greg and Margie's just like, whatever. She's in the background at the end of the scene, like, whatever. That's all it was.
At some point, we have to talk, and we'll talk about it when we get there at the end. But the look on Greg's face, the last moment with Greg
on the pad. Fucking sad. On the pad.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really sad. But we'll get there.
So funny. So, okay, great.
So she pushes it. But I guess I want to rewind for a second and just say, what is Xenon thinking? Is she thinking that it's the same? Like, there's a real logic bump here for me anyway. Like, to your point, when she's in the water, she doesn't seem all that threatened. It seems like she's just kind of swimming like she would swim in space, whatever the fuck that means. So there's that. So am I supposed to believe that Xenon's like, well, I guess it'll be the same?
That's how it was presented.
Right, but then... Okay, so there's no Jeopardy here whatsoever. In your mind, this is just... Okay. So it's
when
just like,
I watched it back, to me, she even gets her freaking goggles, like, ready to go. The teacher goes, do you know how to swim? She goes, yeah, I did this, that, and the other in space. Where she just says, oh, and then she gets them ready. And she's on, ready to dive in. That's why Margie's able to push. So, yes, from my understanding, she thinks that she could swim. And maybe she just doesn't want to admit when she realizes she's drowning. She gets a little embarrassed and she goes, well, in space, like, not here. And then walks off. That was very unclear.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. As long as you'll agree with me that none of what you said was clear.
As long as we are clear that Margie's just the worst in that moment.
Yeah, no. Margie sucks. I think we can all agree on that.
Got away with attempted murder.
She kind of did. So then Xenon becomes friends with Andrew and Greg.
Yes.
Who really just stare longingly at Xenon, like they want to like unhinge their jaw and just like eat her whole. Like there's just far too many like long shots of them looking at her. I understand that this is made for kids, right? So like the kids have to get the like that there's a connection here, but like it's crazy. Anyway, so then Xenon, I love this part. She goes to the library and she goes to the internet to search up Wyndham, and in big block red letters says confidential information.
Yes. Which how did we even get to that page? How did we even
not even how to get that page? All she did, it was like she typed into Google it'd be like me Googling you, and then the internet says confidential. You can't see anything about this person.
It's right.
Crazy. But anyway, it's great. I love it. But anyway, it's so like the internet is obviously in a very, very primitive stage in 99.
Yes.
It's still early days. I get that. But it's still insane.
I was also, even as you're talking about the library, I just had a flashback. I just remember being so concerned if she was going to be able to dance with Protozoa. So I didn't understand all this file stuff. I didn't care about Wyndham. And I just wanted...
You really weren't into, like, insurance fraud as a child? That wasn't a thing you were into?
I didn't even care about Greg. You know, Greg, you're a sweet, sweet boy. I was totally, totally into Protozoa. We wanted to see, again, the concert. But yeah, I was just anxious the whole time. I'm like, okay, whatever about the files. Are you going to be able to dance with the famous person? I was very invested in that. And also, Judy... Well, I guess we'll get into all this, but yeah. If my ass was grounded and I was sent to a relative's to be supervised, I'm not going on a horse with a boy. Anyway, let's get into it.
So, well, okay. So, so Greg takes her to see some fucking horses.
To his stable.
To his stable. She is, I mean, I guess understandably spooked by the horse.
The only thing she's ever scared about is this horse.
Is this horse. Yeah. I don't really know why. I also find it hard to believe that she's never, like, heard of horses. Like, it seems as though a horse is a completely foreign object to her.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But anyway, so he takes his horse. By the way, like, the most boring, mild-mannered horse you've ever seen. Like, this horse seemed like it had been drugged, to be perfectly frank.
It was just like kids. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So then they, like, brush the horse or whatever, and then they ride the horse together, if I'm not mistaken, right?
In a montage-y moment, yes.
Yes, okay.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I mean, listen. Judy, not parent of the year.
No.
But I do like how chill she is.
Oh, yeah.
She's got a very kind of crunchy granola, hippy dippy sort of vibe to her.
Yes.
Lots of plants in her house. Lots of plants in bedrooms.
Lots of house. Lots of house for one person.
What do you have thoughts on plants in bedrooms? I don't know how I feel about plants in bedrooms.
In terms of what? Bugs?
Well, bugs, sure. Yes, bugs. But because also just like, I don't know. I just feel like nature and my bedroom... Unless I'm camping, in which case, like, I have no choice but to be at one with the woods. I just don't want plants in my bedroom, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's the future.
I kill every plant. I have tried to, and my friends know this, and they've tried to help me. I do have fake greenery around, which people are going to say, ew, so tacky. But I do have fake greenery because I just kill the things and I leave for a good amount of time. Then I come back, whatever. But I'm very interested in why you're concerned about Judy's plants.
Well, I'm not concerned about them. I'm sure Judy's taking great care of them. It's more about... And I'm sure that this is like, I'm sure that the production designer can give me a whole like logic behind this that they wanted to sort. I bet we could get them. But I do feel like, I think it was sort of this, the juxtaposition of like space station, Playmobil, Chuck E. Cheese versus wood, cabin, plants, nature. Like they were trying to juxtapose those two things, which is fine. I just noticed that there was a lot of like
that's interesting
woods and nature and what have you, which is fine. I'm not judging it. It seems lovely. Judy seems great. I have no problems with Judy whatsoever. I think that Judy can do a lot better than Commander Flank or whatever his name is.
Flank.
Prank
plank, whatever.
There was a rumble. She fell on him accidentally. And then I guess it was actually before that. They just locked eyes and that was it.
Yeah. We love, you know, Judy's so much better. She deserves so much better than him. I mean, listen, the actor that plays Commander Plank, is that his name? Plank, has been in 8 million things. I've seen him a bazillion times. I'm sure he's a lovely man. He's very funny. He's fine. He's whatever. He's at least 15, maybe 20 years older than Judy for sure.
Yeah.
I just want what's best for Judy is really all that.
We just want Judy to be okay. We want her to thrive. Yeah. I just thought it was so sweet that they really set up this moment of foil between her and Xenon on Xenon's bed the first night. And she goes, "I look up to you," or whatever she says. She goes, "I could never do this." We know that Judy doesn't travel. We know that she's scared of a lot of things. I'm assuming she's just nervous in general. Maybe that's why she doesn't have a partner. Not sure. But it was very much Xenon goes after everything. And this was
admirable. You really understand Judy. I feel like you understand Judy on a level that most don't.
You know, as I'm watching in the last day, I go, "Oh gosh. Well, dudes, I get it." But all Judy has, she's funny. Judy's funny.
Judy's great. Judy is probably the MVP of this movie, if we're being completely honest. Yes. She's great. And like you said, she is a good foil to what Xenon's going through. But so essentially, Xenon starts to uncover this plot mastermind by the station bigwig, Parker Wyndham.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to use a computer virus to crash the space station and collect the insurance money.
While the biggest pop rock star is up there, and Lutz says something, "This was a great cover-up. Send this person so it really looks like we did." I said, okay, so you're just terrorists, dare I say it, just willingly gonna...
Murders.
Yes, just murder all of those people in space. Mm-hmm. Now, this is definitely something now that I've watched it going, whoa! What the heck was going on? I remember the little boy Andrew sitting at his computer. I remember this scene with the little graphic of the egg, which is the virus, right? And some little wormy thing comes out of the egg and starts eating. Now, I crashed so many computers in the 90s, just playing computer games on whatever computer we had. So that still causes me anxiety.
Can I just pause you for a quick second here? You kill all the plants.
Yeah.
Destroy all the computers.
You need a chill chamber.
I'm a little worried about your maternal instincts. I gotta be honest.
Oh, good God. You and I both. That's a different podcast. But yes, I remember this virus starting to happen. I remember that scene. And then not just the computer crashing, it starts sparking.
It's sparking. Yeah. Yeah.
It sparks. Also made me question, now that I was watching it back, paying attention to that. We're in like the school library the next day and we start seeing this image. I was ready for the school computer to go on fire. And so that one didn't. That was confusing. Yeah. But this whole virus thing, that this virus could slowly eat away the entire space station.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fucked up. Like it's really like what Wyndham is trying to do is straight up murder of hundreds, perhaps thousands of people, including celebrities. Not that they're of a higher level. I'm just saying that, like, you know, there's that. And pretty chill about it. Him and Lutz are not particularly maniacal. They don't feel like mustache twirly. They're very kind of like clear cut about it. And it's just sort of like, this is what we have to do.
Yeah.
It's kind of terrifying in a different way. But we learn all of this. And then Andrew and Greg join with Judy to figure out a way to get her back on the spaceship, which involves her meeting Protozoa and his pop rock band Microbe.
Yes.
And him, like, there's again, I know it's a kid's movie, but there's a lot of coincidence that has to happen. He needs to see her ticket. He needs to see the thing that she had on her.
Get right on the space station. Forget about your parents.
He's like, come on.
let's go. But also, because I was really paying attention to this Margie chick, who I just thought was outstandingly mean this time around, I go, why is she here? Besides for stay away from Greg. Then all of a sudden she drops, well, my dad works for. And so now we know, okay, so she was the girl who was behind this event for Protozoa, gets Xenon at least in the door. And yeah, Protozoa just, go on, girl, get on the spaceship.
Here's another question I have about Protozoa. There is a sort of ambiguity to his voice, to his culture, to everything.
Oh yeah,
not knocking it, but it did make me go, like, he seems like an alien or something. Like, he seems like which I guess is kind of the point. And perhaps that's part of his, like, image or his persona or his whatever that he's created. Mm-hmm. It should also be said that he spells his name Proto Space Zoa.
Mm-hmm.
So there isn't any mistaking. He's not actually using the word protozoa as one word. But he's all about Xenon, helps her get on the thing, helps her get on the space station. And so then Andrew creates a computer antivirus.
The 13-year-old.
So then she gets there and she needs to, like, insert the antivirus into the space station. Judy comes with. Judy faces her fears, gets on this spaceship. She's very nervous about all of this, but mm-hmm. she does it, which is great. Even if, like, I don't know what Judy's end game is. Like,
it's
a little bit like, I gotta go with Xenon because I'm
her also just
mom,
have to prove to my sister that I was watching her daughter, perhaps.
Yeah.
But she does. I think she does mistakenly get stuck on the shuttle going after Xenon. But when they arrive, the space mm-hmm. station has 15 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
So also, like, just
TikTok, motherfuckers. Like, yes. They are really close to all dying.
So Microbe just arrives and they're like, you're dying in 15 minutes. Yeah. Crazy. And yes, Wyndham and Lutz is found by my favorite character, the operator of the space shuttle. And she's like, whoa, what are you doing here? And they're going, turn the ship around. Because then Lutz goes, great plan. We just weren't supposed to be here when it was blown to smithereens or whatever the heck he says. And Commander Plank is still, Xenon doesn't know what she's talking about. Lock her in my office with Judes. And yet somehow Xenon gets to the little disky thing within 30 seconds of it about to explode.
Correct. It is right down to the wire.
Yes.
But what's interesting about all of this is that it's all played very light. Like, it's all played with a very light touch, mm-hmm. even though what's happening is incredibly dire and, like, quite scary.
Oh yeah.
Which is sort of Disney's MO, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all about sort of tone as opposed to not necessarily what we're saying as it is how we're saying it. You know, if it's, you know, any number of parents that die at the beginning of their movies as sort of, you know, impetus for story and what have you, which is just, you know, that's life. I get it. And preparing children for, you know, their mortality, I think is important. But mm-hmm. But this is all played very sort of like light. So it's right up to the last minute. Basically, Plank won't believe Xenon's story. And then Wyndham accuses her of trying to sabotage the station. Like, now it's starting to feel like Wyndham's like, I'm going to pin this crash on her, which is crazy. Then Xenon manages to load the antivirus, blah, 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 just in time. Wyndham is arrested, as is his assistant. And then everyone enjoys the Microbe concert and it all works out.
But we really have to highlight, everyone enjoys the Microbe concert. But Commander, the Commander.
No, but Greg.
Oh, okay. Well, first, this is also what I noticed. There was a very strange, not okay look on the commander's face when Protozoa comes over to Judy and is like, zoom, zoom. And Commander's just uncomfortable because now he has a lady and doesn't know what to do with a lady. And so I guess that's why.
Known her for 5 minutes.
5 minutes. We almost blew up 30 seconds ago. But I loved the performance. I feel like all of us kids used to just think about it. And I loved the selfless act of Xenon going, whatever, her best friend was gonna go up and dance with him instead, and Nebula. Oh, I love that. So cute. But I mean, and just Raven. I just love her. And
Raven's great. Raven's
great. She's always a standout. But you can totally tell, like you were saying, this was Xenon's thing. Number one on the call sheet. Because we know that Raven can shine. And she still did, but they could have given her so much more, in my opinion. Sure. But yes, that concert at the end was all that other stuff about the virus and this and that. Oh, I didn't know what the heck was going on.
Like, it didn't even happen. Like, oh, yeah,
totally.
So at this point in the film, Xenon has been reunited with her parents. She's reunited with the space station. She's stopped, you know, anarchy and death and all sorts of things from happening with the help of her friend Greg on Earth, who clearly is really into her, right? Like, they kiss, he's got real feelings for her. And then she just basically says, later, and he's left looking at this iPad like she just fucking cut his heart out. And
like, what the heck was that?
So sad. And that's the last we see of him. The last we hear of him is this crestfallen, crushed 12-year-old boy as his girl flies off into space.
Because he even said, I think, hours before, the day before, you know, if you leave, I'm really going to miss you. And cool. I have to leave because everyone's about... Yeah, she goes, well, you know, everyone's about to die, so I got to go. That's not what she says. But essentially, what's she going to do? She blows him a kiss on this iPad, basically. He just kind of goes...
He just waves.
A little wave, a tiny, tiny wave with a puppy eyes.
It's the most pathetic image in the movie. It's the most pathetic image in the film. He doesn't like grab the kiss. He doesn't like kiss her back. He just pathetically waves.
and now I'm thinking it's daylight where he is. Is he outside in a picnic table somewhere? Just life is going on somewhere else. And
is he in the, I gotta look up. Is he in the next one?
From the posters that I looked at, I don't think so. He went on to do Everwood. I think he was the actor.
Yeah, he's directed. He's now a TV director. I think Greg just kind of bounced.
Moved on. This was a cool fact that I looked up about this.
Oh yeah,
Greg is from Vancouver. I think that's what he's. Oh yes, he is because
from Toronto, I think, or Vancouver or something like that.
He said that he auditioned for this and he knew that it was going to film at his school during summer break. So not only did he get the role, but when we see Xenon and the kids in class, it's his friends. It's his actual schoolmates.
Oh, that's cute.
I thought, you know, yes, I think I speak for everyone at that age.
Mm-hmm.
You just wanted to be the person who drew the Mickey Mouse ears, only on Disney Channel, whatever the heck it was. I think we all wanted to be in Lizzie McGuire, That's So Raven, whatever the heck the show at the time was. So then you get to do it. It's at your school and it's with your friend. That must have been crazy when they were younger. He said he was like 13. Absolutely. So cool.
He also, I have to shout this out as a fellow Canadian.
Yes.
He received the most Canadian sounding award that's ever been. He got the Golden Maple Award for Newcomer of the Year in a TV series broadcast in the US in 2016. I didn't know that the Golden Maple Award existed, but it obviously does, and it obviously is in Canada, and I can only assume that it's filled with maple syrup or something along those lines, because that's the only logical explanation.
Amazing.
But he was great in this. I'm thrilled he went on to have a great career. I mean, listen, this movie was... I understand why this movie is... nostalgic to a generation, perhaps one younger than mine. I don't like to acknowledge it, but there are people that are younger than me. And I get it. I mean, listen, I can't really put myself into the headspace of what it must have been like to have something like this. I'm sure that, you know, the equivalent I had, you know, was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and like things that sort of late 80s comedies. But yeah, I mean, it's a very sweet, fun, silly movie. But it's hard for me to rate this movie, if I'm being completely frank, because like, you know, it's before we did this podcast, I was at like a 60. Like, I know that's harsh, but I'm just like, I don't. And, you know, we've talked about it, and I certainly feel like your feelings about it have rubbed off on me to a certain degree or another. So I'm going to bump it up to like a 70. But
that's
like,
fair.
That's kind of where I land on it. But I'm very curious to hear where you land on this one.
Well, I am just thrilled to pieces that you had to watch this for the first time.
Yeah.
Way after you would have found this interesting. As the 8-year-old me, 100,000%, you briefly... Forget it. It was everything. We briefly mentioned I did audition for the third movie for her cousin Dasha. The skinnier, prettier, blonder girl got it. Duh.
I mean, skinnier, really?
Oh, probably. I'm Italian. You know, I was probably a normal looking child. But it was, of course, a dream just to even, I was like, oh my God, I would be Xenon's cousin. So cool. Obviously didn't happen. So cool. But I sent you a screenshot there. We found a makeshift spacesuit. We really went there. Talk about first self-tape ever. It was a joy, you know, and just to live that for 2 seconds. But anyway, nowadays, when I watch this back, I would say 80% is where I'm at. 80% because of all the good memories.
That I understand. I mean, this is... So Kenny and I have been doing recently a Patreon for 1989 movies, which obviously we hope that our listeners are subscribing to. There are movies that are so burned into my DNA because I watched them at a time when A, I was really impressionable, or B, I had watched them so many times.
Yeah.
I mean, I know every word of dialogue from When Harry Met Sally. Like, that movie is burned into me. So I can't really be objective about that movie. Like, that movie is just like, that movie is perfect. I you know, but so I understand this movie. Not, it's obviously this movie isn't When Harry Met Sally, but I understand you saw this movie at a time when it, like, you know, imprinted.
Oh, but just to piggyback off that, when I was watching it, it was crazy that there were little clips that obviously they would take out of the movie to say, watch this Sunday, because they were going to re-air Xenon. I remembered which clips they took, and I also remembered how she was going to say things, and I remembered the lines that were about to come. And I thought that was crazy, because as much as you won't believe it, I have not been watching this movie for the past 19 years. But it's crazy to me that I remembered the inflection. I remembered when she got pulled away, she said this thing. It's remarkable how that comes back.
I will say something too, and I don't mean to use this as an excuse, but I'm going to. Growing up in Canada, Disney Channel stuff, Nickelodeon, that stuff, like, it just didn't travel up there in the same way. It's not to say that we didn't get it. We got it eventually, but a lot of that stuff really didn't populate and really didn't start until, you know, the 90s, right? And by that point, I've aged out of that demo, right?
Totally.
So, like, it doesn't make sense for me to be watching that stuff. So I didn't really have these Disney Channel movies that I'm assuming, because just based on you and friends that I have around your age, that were so prevalent, right? Like, they were on all the time, or you had the video cassette and you watched it constantly, whatever it was. That stuff for me was like, I don't want to say more legit movies, but theatrical movies, movies that were aged up. And so it's a different animal.
Totally.
But I totally get it. I totally understand why the movie is, you know, still in your head. It'll be in your head forever. Like, that's just, it's
protozoa for life. My new goal is to book something with this actor, Philip Rise. I don't know how to say his last name, but he's still doing stuff. And I go, I'm going to be in something with Protozoa. Just to say that it was. I do have to
probably set you up with Protozoa very easily, Jenna.
Yeah, let's do something. But meanwhile, I do have to say that my first year in LA, I started working at a restaurant. This is now 8 years ago. And I was the hostess, and someone comes up with a baby carriage and big, big glasses. She takes them off, and it's Kirsten Storms. And so I was not okay. No. I was supposed to say, hi, how are you? And I froze. Now, listen, Cameron Diaz would come in. Octavia Spencer would come in. But Kirsten Storms came in. And I went over to someone. I was like, I gotta go into the kitchen. You have to deal with her. I can't. I said, it's Xenon. I can't do it. I cannot do it.
You must have seemed insane.
They must have insane. This happened a couple times with different people. Just, there's certain people where I go, I can't, my worlds, I can't do it. I can't believe you're here.
I don't get particularly starstruck. I mean, I'm just, and that's not me bragging. I just think it's just, you know what it's like, right? When you live in LA long enough,
you see everyone. People just seem
like people, right? Like, and then once they seem like people, you're just kind of like, ugh, you're just a person. Like once that happens, it's not, there are some people for sure that have left, like So when I first moved to Los Angeles, I moved here in January 18th, 2005. Mm-hmm. And I got in my car. My dad was kind enough to buy me a VW Golf. And I got in my car and I drove to the Pacific Ocean because I had never really seen it before. And I was like, I can go to the Pacific Ocean. And I parked my car and I walked up to Santa Monica Pier or walked up to the beach line or whatever. And Natalie Portman just like walked by with like some guy. And it blew my mind for a bunch of reasons. But also it made me go like, wait, they really are just like everywhere. Like they're just like, they just live here. And once that happens, it really kind of warps your perception of like, I get more starstruck by seeing like Chris Nolan at the Arclight. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that type of stuff where I'm just like, that's
cool. That's yeah. Cool.
I haven't seen any
for me it yet. Was for me it is always someone who is not actually this big person. Like I said, like I've served Sean Penn, I've served whoever when I was working in restaurants, and it is always the YouTuber that I enjoy. That if I see the YouTuber, let's not get into the YouTube. I mean, like the original beauty gurus, this and that, whatever. If there's someone who you feel like, oh, wait, you're a friend, but you're not. You also probably missed the cutoff for the whole YouTube thing. But it's weird because obviously even on sets, I respect the crap out of some people who are on sets.
I mean,
things that.
I'm kidding, yeah.
So then you have to do your job. That's what it is. But when Xenon just walks by after being such a hero for you, that's when you are allowed to lose it.
I'm trying to think of like who it would be that I would really lose it over. I will say this. You brought up something that I think is also part of it as well, which is the delineation or the sort of the difference between a television actor and a movie actor is very different too. I remember there was an interview that George Clooney gave many, many years ago where, you know, ER was in its peak and people just go up to TV people, right? Like, because they think you're their friend. You're in their living room every week, right? So there is this, you're on a small screen, you're in their home, you feel like a friend. A movie star, although I'm sure there are any number of people that go up to movie stars all the time, but most people feel a slight separation because they seem larger than life and they seem like a thing that shouldn't be approached. It's kind of a slightly different thing. But yeah, I mean, I think I've gone up to like two people, three people in my...
So now let's bring it back to Xenon for a second. If you were 13, Xenon was so in love with Protozoa. That was her, when she was 13, that was her thing. For me, it was probably, yes, Xenon, but every Broadway actor, I was already there. Julie Andrews, I wrote a freaking biography on Julie Andrews when I was in fourth grade. So I was already in that world. But for you in Canada at 13, Who was that for you?
Who was that for me? I mean, it's kind of a tough question. I mean, if we're going to talk about like musicians, you know what I mean? I think Shirley Manson was pro and still is. I saw actually Shirley Manson at the Arclight once.
Yeah.
And she walked by, and I'm sure she would have been fine if I had gone up to her just based on the way that she seems. But I could not think of a single thing that was worth saying to her.
Yeah.
That I was just like, I'm just going to let that person go by. Shirley Manson definitely would probably be up there. Certainly when I was 13. I mean, in terms of like TV stuff, you know, ER was my show, so I'm sure it would have been a George Clooney or something like that, I guess, to some degree,
yeah.
Or someone from the West Wing. But yeah, it's hard because as a kid, I didn't really gravitate towards kids' things as much.
I totally get like, that, yeah. Like, as I'm gushing about Xenon, I'm like, yeah, I totally understand that.
It's a weird thing where like, and I've said this on the Patreon, so I apologize if I'm repeating myself, but I didn't sleep well as a kid. I would like get to sleep and then I wake up in the middle of the night and I just had I still do have an overly active imagination. So I would get up and I would sneak into our TV room and I would just watch movies until I fell asleep. And it was like basically the same group of films. It was like Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, A Fish Called Wanda, and When Harry Met Sally. So like those four movies I've watched innumerable times. And so like, I didn't have a Xenon, right? Like I didn't have a kid's thing. I didn't even really watch that many Disney films. Cause like Disney, if you remember before your time, but Disney prior to The Little Mermaid was kind of in the weird sort of tall grass of not really understanding what it was doing, wasn't doing very well. Like Little Mermaid goes into Aladdin, goes into Beauty and the Beast and like that, you know, the heyday. Mm-hmm. And at that point I'm 11, 12, 13. So it's like, I'm right on the cusp of aging out of those movies.
Yeah.
So I just didn't really have like the same Disney-ified.
It's very interesting because it could even be just a 2-year gap of cutoff. I wasn't the High School Musical crowd, so I didn't get that. I wasn't Jonas Brothers. Camp Rock was another big one. I just missed all of those. So that's also really interesting to look at in terms of these types of made for TV films, but also when it comes to Disney, this was about it for me. I liked my Disney Channel original movies, and I'm not kidding. My sister's a huge Disney fan, so she makes up for me lacking in it. But yes, I was also Mary Martin's Peter Pan, Sound of Music. I watched over and over again. Just wanted to be Brigitte. That was the thing.
Which one's that? Who's she?
She was, I'm 10 and I think your dress is the ugliest one I ever saw. That's exactly who she was.
Yeah. Yeah, that tracks.
Brigitte to Judy.
I saw Sound of Music for the first time a few months ago in my AFI movie club. I had never seen it before.
Oh my gosh.
It's good. It's a good movie. I'm sorry. It's just like, I understand why people love it. I do.
Yeah.
It's a very well-made movie. Even if it's kind of insane at times and is doing some pretty crazy stuff, but I still really loved it. We watched West Side Story as well. Like those old classic musicals require a suspense of disbelief. It's just what they are. And that's why they're special and great and all that. In 99, you said you were 8 years old, but I believe that you have watched a fair amount of 99 content since. Are there movies from 1999, just so that people don't think that you're only...
Xenon or bust.
Xenon or bust. I mean, I'm making you a shirt that says that, but do you have other films, perhaps more acclaimed movies from 99 that you like?
You had done one on Anywhere But Here, right? Love.
Why that one?
Well, I think that was the first time that I was Anywhere But Here. That was definitely Natalie Portman and Susan Sarandon, correct?
That was definitely them. Yeah.
Yes. So I think this is going to sound pretentious of me, but I think
doubt it.
As an actress, when I was getting older, I no longer was looking at the Xenons. I was looking like towards people like Natalie, and then also Susan Sarandon, and then Thelma Louise, and sure. all of that. So yes, we definitely did not just stop at Xenon.
I was not suggesting that. I wanted to just make sure that our listeners didn't think that the only movie from 99.
I'm happy to rep the millennials who are probably going to scream pointing out Judy's plants. I am here to represent the fans of Protozoa. And you know, something light and fun, you know? That's what we need.
Just to be abundantly clear, I am thrilled that you came on to talk about Xenon.
Me too.
Truthfully, you know, it's a movie that I didn't really know existed. And a lot of these Disney Channel films are obviously very important to a certain generation in 99. And we want to make sure that we're covering all our bases on this podcast. So I very much appreciate you coming on, but I also wanted to hear your thoughts about perhaps slightly more higher minded.
Yes. And I appreciate that. And what you had also said when you invited me on, of course, you all have done so many podcasts already on so much of it. And you know that Freaks and Geeks was something that I was really excited to talk about because there's so much, but you had done the miniseries as well. You know, all that.
I could see you having been on Freaks and Geeks as well.
And again, obviously I missed it because I was definitely younger. But I look at those folks too and feel seen on that. And I think that's why that really worked.
Yeah, I mean, Freaks and Geeks, you know, as we said on our miniseries, was still holds up unbelievably well. Mm-hmm. You know, it's as you know, in television, you know, sometimes it's better to burn out than fade away. And sometimes it's better for a show to have had 16 or 18 episodes and then disappear. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting that I wouldn't have wanted 2, 3, 10 more seasons of Freaks and Geeks. But what we got was so kind of perfect in its own way. I think it's really interesting to see now in sort of the streaming world that we live in, how, you know, episode orders are shrinking. The way that we watch things, if it's a binge or if it's 3 episodes or 1 episode or whatever it is, I think that it's interesting to see North America starting to come around to sort of European sensibilities when it comes to, you know, we'll give you 6 episodes or we'll give you 10 episodes and then we might go away for 2 years or, you know, might go away forever. Like there's more than enough content now to obviously to pacify people and to placate people. But it's just interesting. A show like that on a broadcast network, it's sort of insane that it existed at all. You know, when you watch it now, you're just like, I can't believe they got away with what they got away with.
Right.
It's pretty staggering stuff. And listen, we have lots more stuff to cover. And it goes without saying that we'd love to have you back to talk about other television shows from 99 that you might have been watching.
Yeah, I would love that. And this was so fun. And I would totally come back and not just represent the DCOM, the Disney Channel Original Movie, as they're called.
I have a friend who on Twitter, I'll read you what she sent me a message today that said, my personal Zoom room password is Supernova because of that Xenon song, and no one has ever gotten it. And I said, wow, you're a diehard fan. It's amazing how many people have messaged me about how much they love this. She says, yeah, it was either that or Polo Pan because of their song, but that's not as generic and as fun and Easter egg, blah, blah. Zcon is definitely top 3 DCOM, to which I said, DCOM, to which she said Disney Channel Original Movie. So there you go.
Amazing.
The other two that she loved were Motocrossed and Cadet Kelly. I don't know if
Motocross is amazing. Cadet Kelly, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Christy Carlson Romano, my girl, and Hilary Duff as well. Motocross was badass. We had a Mulan thing, I think, going there.
Okay.
I do have to mention it because this was hilarious. I do not believe it was 1999, but you had sent me a podcast that you were a guest with Dana Schwartz on, and they were talking about Winona Ryder and how that was many people's first crush. But like Dana, I cracked up when she said this. She goes, there was a movie called Luck of the Irish. And I was like, yes. Now that boy in that at the time, again, it was the trend of now we had like the little gelled flip. I don't know if you remember the little gel flips with the bleach. I want to say his name is Ryan because I was so in love with him.
I'm looking this man up.
Either his character's name was
2001.
Okay, so shortly
Ryan
after.
Ryan Merriman is the
character?
The lead character. The actor's name is Ryan Merriman. The lead
that's
name
crazy
is
that
Kyle
I know that.
Johnson is the character's
I think he's a
name.
Leprechaun in it.
Jesus Christ, hold on. He might be. 15-year-old basketball player Kyle Johnson is depending on a gold charm for luck. He needs to get back to break a spell controlled by an evil leprechaun who stole the coin. And he's a basketball player. The log line of this movie is fucking great. Kid today, leprechaun tomorrow.
But that certifiably was, wow, he's attractive. Like for the first time ever. Oh, I don't know now. Now I can't ever say that. But at the time, he was as Lutz would say, Wonder Boy. Do you remember how Lutz said, settle down, Wonder Boy?
It's very strange. Hold on. I'm looking up Ryan Merriman in 2000. Let's see what
I believe he was also one of my restaurant patrons at one time. I don't know for sure, but he was sitting at the bar at one point, and I go, I think that's the luck of the Irish kid. He was an adult.
He was.
He did age.
He's in Final Destination 3. He was on Pretty Little Liars.
Okay.
He's 37 years old. He's from Oklahoma. I mean, listen, you might have a shot.
He's out there, but he probably has kids and stuff. That's what people do. Which is really great, but I need a chill chamber. God are the hopes
we
for anyone listening being like, oh, cool, she's
chamber.
Cute. Yeah, just like, this girl's way too much.
We all need a chill chamber. Yes. Yeah, I mean, listen, Ryan Merriman, if you're out there.
Good God, find me, man.
We'll see.
Ew, another DCOM fan.
I mean, they're. I'm sure that's got to be a problem, right? When you're working in that space,
in the DCOM space, they'll all get reboots, so they can't complain.
This is true too. He'll be like the luck of the Irish's dad in the reboot, or whatever.
He's now full leprechaun. He's like leprechaun today, kid yesterday.
Oh my God, kid yesterday, leprechaun today.
Yeah,
is fucking great. That's a great tagline.
This was a great trip down memory lane.
Yes, it was. And I appreciate you coming on, and we look forward to having you back.
Yes.
To talk about, I don't know, Lord knows we'll find something
cool
that you're interested in talking about. One last thing, please rate, review, and subscribe. Speaking of subscribing, check out our Patreon on all the best films of 1989, Batman, When Harry Met Sally, Fabulous Baker Boys, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Ghostbusters 2, Field of Dreams, Major League, and many, many more. We are covering all the best films of 1989 with amazing guests like Joanna Robinson, Liz Hannah, Hunter Covington, Brian Cogman, David Iserson, and many, many more. All your favorite guests from our 1999 podcast are coming on to the 1989 Patreon. You can sign up for it at patreon.com/podcastlikeit's1989. For only $5, you get access to all of these awesome episodes. And for a few bucks more, you get video of our 1999 episodes as well. Plus, there are other very cool tiers too, where you can even be a guest on our podcast. Also, please check out our Reddit as well at reddit.com/podcastlikeits. We're also on Twitter at podcastlikeits. We're also on Instagram at podcastlikeits. Thank you to Ernie and Will for producing our episodes, Sullivan for our social media, Jan Katas for our artwork and theme songs, and most of all, thank you all for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.